Ron Ananian.
It's not your imagination. It is a different repair process. We're going to fix cars differently going forward. We have to. There's no choice.
And it's a hot one, like 7 inches from the midday sun. Well, I hear you whispering the words and melt everyone, but you stay so cool.
The Car Doctor.
I would talk to the Yukon guys and say, hey, do your gears tend to be a little louder overstock depending upon how they're cut? Because some gear manufacturers cut their gears at a different angle, for more aggressiveness.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Someone said to me this week, you know, what is it about the radio show that you just enjoy so much? Because you sound like you're really having a good time. And I'm glad. You know what? I am having a good time. I really enjoy doing what I'm doing.
It must be working with me.
It must be working with Tom. And I only say that because I need a favor from Tom, and I'll tell you about that a little bit later. I'm not going to tell that story now, but I'm going to call on all of you. I need a favor. Should I tell the story now, Tom? I'll tell the story now. Okay. About 15 years ago, I was surprised I never told Tom this story, and I wanted to talk about the Malibu water pump. We'll do that later. I wanted to tell this story for the longest time, and I thought I had. About 15 years ago, we've always been a network syndicated show, and we were live in New York City on WOR radio, big 50,000 watt screaming radio station, right? And you know, as it was, sometimes I was on the weekends, like I always am, and sometimes they would call you in. Joan Hamburg, one of the big New York City voices at the time, was taking a vacation week, and they wanted me to come in on a Wednesday and do Joan's show from noon to two. I think that was the time slot, noon to two or two to four, noon to two. I think it was noon to two. And I did the show, and you know, naturally, the one caveat was it can't turn into 2 hours of the Car Doctor on a Wednesday, which that lasted for about 8 minutes. I answered a couple of questions about where to eat in New York, and then the third person wanted to know they had a problem with their Focus. I remember this, and from there, it was kind of like Johnny Carson when he walked on the set of Letterman. It's like we took off from there, and it was call Car Doctor for 2 hours. And I got off air, and this is the part where it kind of got, I was sort of, you know, I was tired. I'd come off air. I'd just done weekday. Weekday is a very different energy than doing weekends. And Dr. Joy Brown, another huge voice of New York radio 15 years ago, was coming out of her studio with none other than Tim McGraw. And I didn't know who he was, I'll be honest. I don't really pay attention to what a singer looks like, and I learned who he was after the fact. And she came over to introduce me, and Tim couldn't have been nicer. He was the nicest guy in the world. I got to tell you, Ron, a great show. I don't know if he was being polite, if he really listens to the show. I don't know. This is what he said. He said, Ron, you know, I really enjoy the show. I listen every time I'm in New York, and I try to catch it when I'm traveling. But I'm always fascinated by the way you talk about cars and what you know and what you do and so forth. And just couldn't have been nicer. And Dr. Joy Brown was there, and we're all kind of kibitzing it up, as we say here in New Jersey. And Tim goes, hey, Ron, how'd you like to come out and see me work tonight? Now, this is the part where Ron was stupid, because Ron didn't realize it was Tim McGraw. Ron was confused and thought it was Tug McGraw. Tug McGraw played on the 69 Mets, and his answer was, you got to believe, right? And it's actually Tim's father. And I couldn't help, I'm thinking he was Tug McGraw, the baseball player, and I couldn't figure out why he was wearing a cowboy hat the whole time. But it just, I never put the two together. And I was very nice. I said, gee, Tim, I said, I'd like to, but I think we've got something going on. And I can't get out of it. And I've really got to, because I'm thinking my wife doesn't really want to go to watch a baseball game. She's just not into baseball, which is okay. He says, come on, I'll get you behind the scenes tickets. And, you know, I figured, well, my wife definitely doesn't want to go into the dugout. I said, why would she want to sit in a dugout with a bunch of, you know, baseball players yelling and screaming, carrying on? My wife's a very quiet, gentle kind of person. And I said, and I begged off. Dr. Joy Brown, her jaw was on the floor. She just couldn't figure out what I was talking about. I went home and I told my wife, and I explained the whole thing to her. And she said, Tim McGraw, huh? I said, yeah, the baseball player. You idiot. That was Tim McGraw, the country singer. Oh, I haven't lived this down yet.
Well, I'm glad she called you an idiot, because I was about to do that.
Well, you know, and this, I'm telling you, Tom, I feel like a dope ever since this happened, because I just, you know, but I was probably thinking about a car at the time, in my own defense. So the reason I'm telling you all this story is not to take up airtime, and I appreciate you letting me do this for the first 5 minutes of the show today, is because we have a daughter getting married next year, and she's a big Tim McGraw fan. She said, and they were talking about it. They're talking about getting a band, and they're doing this, and they're doing that. And your mother, my wife kiddingly said, hey, your father knows Tim McGraw. I said, well, actually, I don't. And my wife said, that's right, you don't. So if anybody out there has a contact for Tim McGraw, I sure would love to, you know, I figure with everybody knows somebody, that 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing. We'll talk about this in the coming weeks, but it sure would be nice if I could at least just drop Mr. McGraw an email, Mr. McGraw now. And, you know, could we possibly, maybe he could do it virtually. We could do a Zoom wedding appearance, maybe sing a song and say hello to Katie and Alex. And, you know, they are two veterans. He's a Marine. She's Army. Maybe we could kind of make that pitch, which I would hate to do it on that. Well, actually, I would do it on that. I'd do anything I could to get this guy to appear. But in any event, that's my Tim McGraw story. And I realize I screwed up, and I'm sorry. Next time I'll be more aware if the guy's wearing. I was thinking, why isn't he wearing a Mets baseball cap? He's Tug McGraw. Like, you know, he's a baseball player. This guy's got the wrong hat on and everything. It ain't easy being me some weeks. But in any event, that's the Tim McGraw story, and I've now humiliated myself publicly, so I feel strong and popular as I move through this hour. Sometime this hour, I'll tell you the Malibu water pump story. Right now, let's do a car thing. Let's go over to Jeff in Maine with a 10 Prius and see what's going on here. Jeff, welcome to the Car Doctor. If you'll still talk to me after I disregarded Tim McGraw, I'm sorry. I have to ask for forgiveness. How can I help?
Yes. Well, I have a Toyota 2010 Toyota Prius,
right,
that I believe it or not camp in, but I'm having problems with the fuel gauge.
Okay.
It shows at nine gallons, it shows that it's empty, and I know it takes 11 gallons or so. I go another 100 miles or more after it's shown empty.
So let me get this right. The gauge is reading 3/4 full. What did you say?
The gauge goes empty, reads so, empty,
right,
at about 9 gallons.
Because you have a digital readout. You have a separate readout than the gauge telling you how many gallons you have left?
It tells me that I have no gallons left, and I still got 100 miles or more in the tank.
Because you can drive 100 miles.
Yep.
Okay, so let me ask you the question this way. If you fill it up, how long does it take for the gauge to come off a full?
About 9 gallons worth, but I mean, off a full?
Right. In other words, if it's reading wrong on one end, it's got to read wrong on the other end. Right?
No, I've never noticed it doing anything strange about staying up there too long.
So you're saying it just gets to E and then you can drive an extra 100 miles?
Correct.
And obviously you're certain it's running off of the engine?
Yes.
Not the hybrid drive?
Correct.
Okay. Has anybody?
I'm still getting 52 miles a gallon.
Okay. Has anybody tried any basic diagnostics just to look for any issues? Is the gauge sweeping right? Is the gauge reading incorrectly? Or I'm your first call?
No, but they told me something about a bladder inside of it, and that it has to be reprogrammed.
A bladder in the tank?
That's what I was reading. That's why I called you up, because it was confusing me.
Yeah, it's confusing me, brother. I've never heard of a bladder in the tank. I mean, there's been problems with, you know, it's just a gas gauge. There's nothing crazy about it. It's a gas gauge. You know, its resistance value at 0 to 90 or 0 to 75 ohms. There's nothing odd about it. It could be a problem with the combination meter cluster. It could be a problem with the sending unit. You know, I would just say it's got to go through some basic diagnostics. What makes them think there's a problem in the tank or there's a problem with a bladder? Who said there's a problem with the bladder? Are you reading this on the internet?
Well, yes, I go online to YouTube.
Okay. And well, yeah, but anything, listen, YouTube is great, I'm not going to deny it, but YouTube is good after you confirm the facts. You still got to go through some basics here. Somebody's got to go back to the fuel gauge or to the sending unit and verify wiring, verify power ground signal. I mean, the same basics if we're going to get into it. I think if memory serves me correct, the fuel gauge has an access panel under the back seat. I'm trying to remember. It's been a while since I played with a Prius of this generation. But, you know, this is nothing special. This has nothing to do with the hybrid drive making it indifferent. You know, that it could be a problem with the sender. And if there is something in the tank, if they're talking about a bladder, it sounds like you're describing something with regarding the lining that's in the tank, and perhaps the lining is coming apart. What do they say the fix is, since they're telling you what's wrong with it?
They say the fix is to reprogram it. You know, you got to turn it off, hit this button, hit that button.
And this is for a 10. This is for a 10 Prius.
This is, well, the ones that they were showing this on were 2009 or less. My generation, I couldn't find anything that was saying how to do it.
Okay. So maybe your generation doesn't have it, and therefore, like I said in the beginning, you're reading incorrect information. Don't overcomplicate it.
All right.
You know, don't overcomplicate it, Jeff. Let's go through some basic diagnostics. For that matter, let's do this. Let's look up a scan tool and get a fuel gauge reading. Scan tool will give you a fuel gauge PID. Does the fuel gauge PID match the dash? Or is the fuel gauge PID off a scan tool different than what the dash says? If the gauge and the computer are both seeing the same thing, I'm going to point you more in the direction of the sender itself or wiring at the sender or a ground or a dirty ground issue, just because both of those are getting information off the sending unit as interpreted through the computer. Making any sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
Let's do some basic diagnostics. Like I said, YouTube is great after we do some research. YouTube is great for how to do it, but may not necessarily have all the answers. All right? Don't overcomplicate what could be a very simple problem. Do some basics. Call me back next week.
Sounds good.
All right, Jeff. Be well. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We are back right after this.
Keep Ron's number handy, 855-560-9900, for when you really need advice on your car. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Greg in Georgia, 92 GMC Sierra. Hey, Greg, how can I help today?
How you doing, sir?
Yes, sir. Good. What's going on?
When the transmission heats up, it loses fourth in reverse, and the gears start slipping a little bit. Feels like there's a bunch of play when it heats up. But when it's nice and cool, it runs perfectly fine.
All right. How many miles are on this?
300,000, sir. But we had the transmission rebuilt at 250.
Okay. What makes you think it's not a trans again?
Well, I believe it might be a trans, but I truly don't know.
Yeah. Well, here's how we can kind of break it down. First of all, in 92, this is sort of a primitive Pete compared to today's modern vehicles. In terms of diagnostics, you can go in with an OBD1 scan tool, a little square plug connector under the left side of the dash, if I remember right.
Yes, sir.
And there were two pins. I think the bottom two in the bottom right-hand corner, we used to have a little jumper wire, and we would jump, and we could count the check engine light for fault codes. And I'd be curious to see what's there. There were some common things. They would set a fault 68. They would set a fault 85. Fourth gear solenoid, fourth gear transmission related issues, you know, that would just lead you towards the solenoid. But at this age and mileage, and it's been apart once, I think you're obligated to pull the trans apart and look at everything. You know, the fact that the fact that it does it only when it warms up tells me something's expanding. You know, a pressure seal or a rubber seal is losing its ability to seal. And something's coming apart. Any warranty on the trans yet, or no, it's all over?
No, sir, it's all over.
Yeah,
by now.
It's all over. I figured 50,000 miles. I don't know how long ago that was. You know, the
fact it was about 5 years ago.
Okay. The fact that it's moving fourth in reverse If I remember right, don't hold me to this, but I think fourth and reverse work off the same shift solenoid in the valve body. And is it slipping in other gears, did you say?
No, sir. When it heats up, it feels like it revs a little bit and then catches. When it heats up pretty good.
Okay, but it loses fourth gear altogether.
Yes, sir. Like when you're going down the highway, say about 55, it goes wah, 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 wah. It shifts between third and fourth.
Yeah, and
it just keeps doing that.
It's just, there's just nothing there. So I would start, before you go and pull the trans, I would start with a scan just to see if you're getting any fault codes out of it. There was some real primitive stuff, compared to today, where we could disconnect wires at the PCM and go through some grounding and applying. But I don't know if that's, at 300,000 miles or 50,000 miles now, but 300,000 on the original case, at least it's not the worst trans in the world to pull out, even if it's four-wheel drive. I'm sure it's four-wheel drive, Greg?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I think you're probably going to end up doing that. But see if you can find a shop that even has an OBD-1, the old-school, old-style scan tool to do a little basic diagnostics before you yank it. You know, it's if you told me it was happening in all gears, I think maybe, we're slipping. Do we have a cracked filter, a filter out of its O-ring? Do we have low fluid aeration, something like that? The fact that it's happening only in specific gears tells me that it's, there were three solenoids, one, two, three solenoids, if I recall correctly, that generation. One of them may be failing, but it may also be an indication of something else, and I think it behooves somebody to take the trans apart and look before you do any further damage, just on the pretense. The other issue is going to be it's an older truck. I'd rather see it come apart once, get a freshening up now while better parts are still available, than damage something 2 years from now if you continue to drive it or however long you'd want to drive it. Let's get it addressed before we make it worse. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Don't call me Sir Greg. You make me nervous. But it's okay. I get it. I appreciate the respect. I really do. My father's name was Sir, as I always say. My name is Ron. You can call me Ron, Greg. All right?
All right, sir.
Okay.
Ron.
I get it. So, listen, you don't happen to know Tim McGraw, do you?
I do not.
Okay.
I know who he is, but I don't know him personally.
Okay. Well, then you're smarter than me if you know who he is. I tell you what, Tom, this is never going to go away, is it? Greg, I appreciate the phone call. You let me know if there's anything else I can do for you. All right, kiddo?
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. God, they make me nervous. They make me old. I'm feeling old. You know, this week I'm standing at the counter and a father and a young son came in to pick up a car, and he's 25, and he's telling me, he's making comments about what's wrong with the kids of this generation today, talking about how they don't, they're not into cars and they don't want to do that. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, he's 25, and he's telling me the kids of that generation, what generation? He is that generation, isn't he? There's a whole other generation underneath them. There's more to come. Oh, good Lord. Anyway, maybe Tim McGraw will call today. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. I'm back right after this. Don't go away. On the name of the Car Doctor. Let's get over to Jim in Naples, Florida. I live in Grand Cherokee.
Wait,
Jim.
Before we do that,
yeah,
I've been doing some research here.
Okay.
What's your budget for this wedding?
Well, I don't think it's that kind of a budget, Tom. You know.
Well, it to book Tim McGraw, it's minimum $500,000.
Yeah, but but he likes me. You know, you got to remember, he likes me. Well, 15 years ago, he liked me. I don't know if he likes me today.
Hey, Mikey, he likes me.
You know. I don't think my budget's $500,000, Tom. It's half of something. I'm just not sure what it's half of. I just figured, maybe, okay, so he can't fly into New Jersey. I understand that part. But maybe he could do this virtually and send out a virtual message and get me off the hook with my wife and kids. He's still a car guy at heart.
That's true.
And his dad was a New York Met. I'm a Mets fan, And how many people would admit that? I think I should get bonus points for that. Anyway, can I go to work now so I can start to pay off this wedding? I'm going to have to get Tim McGraw here, $500,000. Oh, my God. I'm in the wrong business. Jim in Naples, Florida, how can I help you today, sir?
Hi, Ron. Well, thank you very much for your program. I love to listen to it.
Thank you.
And you can put your scan tools away for my problem.
Okay.
I got a 2011 Grand Jeep Cherokee, and the oil pan seal is starting to leak a little bit.
Okay.
And from what I've read on the Jeep forums, you almost have to take the entire subframe out to replace that seal, and of course support the engine before you do that.
And which is this, the V6 or the V6 or the V8, Jim?
This is the 8. This is a small Hemi.
Okay. Okay. Your question to me?
So my question to you, in doing a little research, I came across this stop seal. I looked at K-Seal. I didn't see anything in their catalog for oil pan gasket seal.
Right.
So this AT-205 reseal, it's made by ATP. It seems they have good results. This is on the internet. I just wanted to know if you had any experience with this.
Have no experience with it. I mean, it's not going to hurt anything. It's surely worth a shot. How bad is the leak? And do you know it's the oil pan? Is it the front? Is it the back?
You can tell on both sides. There's a little bit of a drip on several of the screws holding the oil pan in.
Okay.
Everything else above it is dry and clean. It's got 100,000 miles on it. I only drive it a couple thousand miles a year now since I'm retired.
Right.
So I don't know since I don't drive it a lot, if that has a lot to do with it.
It does. I mean, you know, things sit, they seep, they start to stretch, they start to sag, so to speak. You know, the worst thing in the world is letting a house sit empty and a car, you know, sit undriven
right.
in your driveway or garage. So, you know, that does have an effect on it. Listen, I don't think you're going to hurt anything by adding that sealer to it. Will it work? You know, that's a whole nother question. I do know the job. You do have to support the engine up top and lower the cradle to just about get everything out of the way. It's easily a day's labor if you've done the job. It's probably double that if you haven't. And that's if you're doing it on a lift, not on your back in the driveway. On your back in the driveway is
right,
a bigger problem.
Right.
So I, you know, my only other concern would be is how do you know it's not a rear main seal? So is it from the back of the engine? Is it along the side rails? Don't assume just because you see drips on the... Go ahead.
Yeah, towards the front on the side rails.
Okay. So it sounds like the pan gasket's seeping. You know, just basics. I mean, don't kill it because I believe there's a crush sleeve inside that gasket to prevent you from over-torquing, but have you just tried gently snugging the nuts and bolts just to make sure nothing's loosened up over time?
I have not.
Just a gentle quarter-inch stuff. Just, you know, give it a little and, you know, see what that does for you. But if they're that, then it's going to be, you know, you can try the sealer. I'm familiar with ATP if it's who I think it is, and I think they make a decent product. And after that, then it's going to be doing oil pan, but then you've got to decide, you know, is it just the oil pan or is it something else? And you'd want to be sure. Big job. Easily $2,000 by the time you're done. I would have to guess.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't doubt it.
You know.
Now, can I pick your brain on your 55?
Sure.
You always tease us a little bit about that. What kind of drivetrain do we have in it?
That is a hand-built small block. Just a, you know, I say it's a cast iron small block. It's a real boring car. You know, it is in a sense. My dream was to, you know, I wanted 500 horse on the street with a four barrel and turnkey. I don't want to have to work on it.
Wow.
I work on everything else all day long. So, you know, I went down to the machine shop. I did my research. I talked to the guys. And, you know, it dynoed 537 for...
Wow.
What the heck did it do? It did 537 horsepower with a red line. After 6,800 RPM, horsepower fell off. And I think it built maximum torque around 52, and it was like 490. So it's a little bit of a thumper. 490 or 480, something like that. Five-speed Tremec, Ford 9-inch, 410 gears. you know, just nice. just enough to, you know, it's not completely insane. It's, but you know what? Everybody looks at it and nobody, you know, and it's fine. Listen, I'm fine with nobody looking at my hot rod. I really don't care. You know, it just gets, because it's not an LS, because it doesn't have air conditioning, because it doesn't have a blower sticking out through the hood, because I didn't carve. I've heard all the excuses why the car isn't nice. I didn't carve up the wheel wells. You know, it's, I couldn't do all that to this car. This was an original, but I could talk about this all the rest of the show. This was an original 55 two-door post car with 37,000 miles on it that had been sitting since 1958, and I found it in 1999. And
wow.
The original owner had died, walked away. The nephew had the keys, had the title. I bought the car and then restored it, put it back together. You know, I couldn't cut that car up. I couldn't hurt that car. You know, but thank you. That was kind of refreshing. I have to go take the hot rod out tonight.
Yeah, put a couple more pictures of it up on the website.
Yeah,
there's only one picture up there, and kind of like to see it.
Yeah, that's.
Now, is it got original steering, or did you go with rack and pinion?
No, original steering. I like trying to kill myself. You know, the real beauty of a 55 Chevy, and this is where I kind of lose interest in some of these cars, and I get it. Listen, in rack and pinion, you know, a 55 Chevy was meant to be mechanical. You know, I'm sorry. That's just my line. It was meant to be a challenge to drive. It was meant to be a challenge to steer and stop. And that was the whole 55 experience. You know, it's. And I guess if the car wasn't so original and so nice, maybe I would be more open to removing some of these pieces. But when I tell you we took the car apart, Jim, and then I got to go. When we took the car apart, I'll never forget, we took the right door sill plate off to pull up the carpet. And there was a pile of screws under the sill plate. Because when George at the assembly line in Tarrytown, New York, where the car was built or whatever his name was, leaned over to put the screw in the sill plate, a half a dozen screws fell out of his pocket, went under the carpet, and they put the sill plate down right on top of it. I'll never forget that. They were just these screws from 55, like a time capsule. That's how original this car was. This car had the original markings on the firewall where the guys on the assembly line signed off after the battery was put in it. I mean, all the crazy things they did when they built the 55 Chevy. I should have probably restored it original, but I had to make it a hot rod. That much I had to do. So I feel revived now. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. I'll listen, let me know what happens with your oil pan. I'm coming to Naples the first week of August. I'll bring my toolbox, although I'll be on vacation. I'm probably not supposed to do that. 855-560-9900. Don't tell my wife. Ron and Amy, the car doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Amy, the car doctor. The phone number is 855-560-9900. That number is 24/7. You can call 855-560-9900. Leave a message. Executive producer, chief cook, and bottle washer Tom Ray will call you back and put you in the next live broadcast Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. I should point that out. You know, some of you take us on delay. Some of the affiliates are on delay. But we are here live in studio Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. East Coast time. You can call 855-560-9900. And you're in, whether you hear us on your radio at that moment or not. And if you're podcasting, same thing. Let's get over and talk to Carol in Florida. Florida's coming in loud and strong today. They must know I'm coming down on vacation. 05 Suburban. Hey, Carol, how can I help?
Hey, Warren, great to hear from you. Listen, we just love your show, and I'll tell you why I'm calling.
Okay.
I've got this 05 Suburban, you know, my baby. And when I'm making either a hard left or a hard right turn, and this only happens periodically, the power steering will give out, and it's very hard to turn the car into wherever I'm going, say a parking lot, you know?
Okay.
And my husband called Royal Purple, and they said they'd never heard of this happening. And we bought the car about 6 months ago, and it's got about 180,000 miles ago. And from what we can tell on the service records, the power steering fluid has never been changed. So that we thought that's where we would start with putting the Royal Purple fluid in there and seeing if that would help. But I wanted to get your thoughts on what the mystery might be.
I'm all for fluid maintenance. I think you know that about me by now, right? I you know, whether it's Royal Purple or manufacturer spec or the stuff from Lucas. Lucas makes a real good power steering fluid pump sealer. You know, it's all good, and I'm all for it. I don't think that's going to solve your problem. The only thing that comes to mind is, do we have an internal fault in the pump? I would think it should be, you should be able to duplicate it by when you crank the wheel all the way hard left, hard right, you're calling for maximum pressure out of the pump. Could you, you know, do you hear the pump whine change? Does the pump whine at all? Does anything other than not being able to steer, do you notice any of the characteristics different about the way the vehicle operates?
No, Ron, it's dead quiet. It's just the problem steering.
Okay, and it's not, the simplest thing would be it's not a loose belt, right? You've looked at the belt's tight. It's not a possibility that the belt itself is slipping against the pump, against the pulley?
You know, I'm going to have to get my husband to take a look at it. I just don't know, Ron.
You know, it's a SERP belt, and it you would think it would make noise. But, you know, my first thought is, if it's doing it left or right turns, do I have correct pressure out of the pump? But by the same token, let's break it down this way. There's a couple of things this could be, all right? This could be a power steering pump. This could be a box. This could be a steering knuckle or a steering shaft. Let's rule them out. I don't see how it could be a steering shaft, because a steering shaft doesn't know extreme hard or right, left-hand turns, etc. It's a steering shaft would usually buckle or bind, low speed, high speed. It doesn't matter. You're turning it. It's bound. It's a tight joint. It's not going to feel right. So I think we can take that off the table. We're down to either a box or a pump. Which is it? You know, the fact that the pump, is the pump and box, or are the box and pump original, and do they show any signs of wetness, of leakage?
Okay.
Okay, that's okay. Question number one. Question number two, you know, does it have the correct amount of fluid in it? I mean, let's cover basics. You know, low fluid is are you able to cause aeration? If you were to crank the wheel back and forth, shut it off, and pop the cap, is the fluid aerated? And there's going to be some aeration in power steering fluid, but is it extreme? Is it foamy? You know, could we have an internal seal leak that's causing it to cross leak and lose lack of power steering assist? Let me ask you this. When it goes into this no power steering assist, what makes it come back and start to work again?
You know, it just comes back.
Okay, what, when you release the wheel, or you shut the truck off, let it sit for a minute, and then all of a sudden it starts working again?
Oh no, when I release the wheel.
Okay, so are you saying that if a mechanic were to put this in the hard left or hard right extreme position, they would lose power steering assist?
Sometimes. It doesn't happen all the time.
Okay. Then the ability to diagnose it is there. They could put a pressure gauge on the line and see what maximum pump output pressure is, and that's going to be the next step.
Okay, good enough.
All right?
Ron, thank you so much.
You're
been
very
wonderful.
Welcome.
You're really
very welcome.
Appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Carol.
Have a
you
great
be well.
Day.
You're very welcome.
Have
thank
fun
you.
In Naples.
Oh, I will. Enjoy your car. Bye-bye. You take good care. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. I'm going to Naples. So is it hot in Florida, Tom? I'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor. By the way, I should point out, yeah, Tom.
You do realize that most people go to Florida in January?
Yeah, well,
when it's cold up here?
Well, I understand that, but, you know, we like the heat. Listen, if you didn't like the heat, I wouldn't have this job. So I'm always under the gun. I really am. But, yeah, I know. How hot could it be in Florida in August?
It's not the heat in Florida during this time of year. It's the humidity, dude.
Yeah, I know. Listen, between you and me and the 3 million listeners, it was sort of like, we want to go to Florida. I don't think we should. I think we should. Okay, you guys win. I'm just going along for the ride this time. So this way, sometimes you have to do this as the patriarch so that they realize how right you are the rest of the time. Speaking of Florida, would be a good time to talk about air conditioning, right? George from Kentucky writes in, hey, Ron, I've got a 2000 Chevy pickup truck that is apparently in the need of an AC recharge since we parked it before the pandemic. Now we're out and about and moving. The air conditioning isn't as cold as it used to be. What can you tell me about some of these self-service AC kits? George, Kentucky, Louisville. George, I'll tell you what. Get over to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts has a product called AC Avalanche. I'm familiar with the product. As a matter of fact, we've been using it off and on in the last couple of months, solving some problems on older vehicles. And we're going to actually use it this week on none other than, I think we're using it on Carpenter Bob's van. He's got an older Chevy Astro van, a 2000 Chevy Astro van that has a small leak in it somewhere that it's impractical to fix because of the age. It's got super high mileage, but Bob wants AC. AC Avalanche works well. They have this thing called smart chip technology. Really kind of neat. These two tabs you stick in the duct and they turn color as the system starts to charge. And when they reach the proper charge level, they turn, you know, different colors so you know you're correct. Good stuff. You can get out and read about it online, acavalanche.com, or get over to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts, and they'll be glad to help you out. Till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.